Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is a return visit from Griff, who was a surveillance guy who worked outside of Las Vegas. Last week's show was so interesting to both Richard and I, we had more questions, and we're also desperate for people, that we invited Griff back again. Now, there was one question that we were talking about last week on license plates, and do you record them, and stuff like that. Does it matter to you if a player drives himself, walks up, comes in a cab, an Uber, or helicopter, whatever, do you pay any attention to that?
Short answer, not at all. Long answer.
Not at all.
Yeah, no, not really. It doesn't matter. Like we said, you know, the play is the play. It doesn't matter if you take a helicopter or a submarine. At the end of the day, you know, everything you do in the casino is what matters to us. It doesn't matter how you get to and fro. Some people live locally, too. I mean, we've had people walk. We've had people Uber. We've had people take bicycles. So it's all different modes of transportation.
So you have the ability, I'm assuming, a lot of casinos have the ability. You're suspicious of a player, and you can rewind camera to camera and back him up all the way to the time he arrived at the casino and walked in, right?
Correct.
And is that into the parking lot?
Yeah.
Yeah, and is that something that you do at some point? And I mean, how often do you do that?
Oh, that's going to be reserved for like the major stuff. You know, it's not something that we would do on a normal basis for, you know, the general observations. I'll use an example. Somebody caps their bet 70 times on blackjack. You know, we're going to want to find out, number one, did they do that in any other game? Number two, who did they interact with when they were here? Maybe it's a team. So we will take someone like that back all the way to when they got on property to make sure they're alone, or they appear to be alone, I should say, and maybe, you know, get the best picture of them if we didn't catch it live, or if the, you know, say the person got out undetected, or they just got away. You know, we'll try to get the best picture that we can. But yeah, we will take it back all the whole way to ensure that we're not missing anything. For the minor stuff, no. For an AP, not all the time. You know, probably not ever. It's just not something that we would do. But for the bigger stuff, yeah. If there's, you know, a patron who say gets robbed in the parking lot, we'll do our best to backtrack the suspect and see if they were ever inside, or see where they came from, or see what they were driving. Now that would be, go back to your license plate question. You know, that could be something where the license plate comes in handy. If they're driving, if their car is on property or something like that, if we were able to get it, anything to help the police in a matter like that, we would do. For an AP, that's really not an exercise. To me, that's an exercise in futility for somebody that's not doing something illegal.
Well, the reason I was asking. Go ahead, Bob.
Did you actually say capping your bet 70 times?
Oh, yeah, that'll happen.
Seven. Wow. I can't see how you can get over 64 without one note. But anyway.
There should be a rule. You can only cap up until your age.
And would they do something to the pit boss?
I like that rule.
Yeah, that's a good rule. Yeah, so the table game, yeah, table games could get disciplined for something like that. I mean, if it's the same dealer over and over again, yeah, that would be a problem. There's game protection built into everything, and they should, you know, how does that happen so many times? But that's rare. I mean, I've seen it happen, but it's rare.
But getting back to the original question, I was asking that about advantage players and who they talk to in a casino. But you're saying for advantage players, you don't bother with that, to go back and see if they talk to anybody or...
No, not all the time. I mean, you might see somebody, I've seen people get coached at the game. That's a good example. So if you're seeing somebody get coached at the game, you know, you're coaching me on how to count, or you're coaching me first base and third base on Ultimate Texas and we're hole carding. That could be something that we pick up on, and we might be like, oh, hey, are these guys together? And then we might. But if it's normal, you know, if it's just you counting or something like that, or if it just seems like it's one person for an AP, no, not really. And the other person, you know, the only reason why we might do it is just to you know, find out, number one, you don't ever want to wrongfully accuse somebody of doing something, even if it's advantage play. You know, you don't want to get somebody barred or backed off if they're not doing anything. That's the most important thing. You don't want to be wrong. So you want to make sure that the person is, in fact, you know, Richard Munchkin is with me, and we came in together, and we're sitting at first and third base, and we're both hole carding. And okay, yeah, that's happening, and we'll put me as an associate to you, and or if you're training me on how to count on blackjack, you'll put me as an associate to you, and kind of link the two of us together. But most of the time, no.
But if I were sitting with a lady next to her, as a posing as either a boyfriend or a husband or something, and you know, teaching her how to play, even though coded wise, I was actually teaching her more than just hit and stand. That looks normal, so that it would be, that would not be a problem.
It would look normal, yeah, but I mean, the play says everything. It's, again, it always goes back to the play. There's nothing that's going to disguise, you know, say you're counting, or, you know, hole carding is a little bit of a different ball game, because I'm sure, you know, you can make signals that might not be easily detectable, but counting, the play is going to get you every single time. It's not that's not something, even if, you know, and then if you arrive in the same car together, and you know, both of your bets are varying, or hers is and you're flat betting, and it's, you know, it'll always come back to the play.
What about
I'm suspect our listeners can really tell that we're in rooms several miles apart, not in the same room. So it would be, since Griff is not in Las Vegas, we had to do this, and it goes smoother when we're all in the same room, but thank you to our audience for putting up with it. Now, on hole carding, now clearly if the guy has his head resting on the table, you got a clue he's hole carding.
Mm-hmm.
But
and an idiot.
But assuming he's somewhat more subtle than that, other than slouching, I'm assuming the overhead cameras cannot hole carding. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would be pretty tough. Like Richard said, you know, unless you're acting like an idiot, it's really hard to detect. And if you have a good game on hole carding, you can go a long way.
So I wanted to get into reading players' texts. You know, we've heard a lot about this, actually, where people have been pulled up because surveillance was reading their texts, and the guy was texting his partner saying, you know, come into the game, it's really good, or I think there's heat. How often do you do that?
So it's not something that you openly practice, because it can get you into a lot of trouble. It's if you're just randomly doing it to do it, you know, there's an issue with that. For AP, I don't have, you know, there's no point to me. I get people want to be investigative, but that kind of thing, to me, the only way that you should be doing that kind of thing is where you suspect a computer may be used to be cheating. So if you think there might be an app in play to count cards, or you think that there may be somebody recording, you know, the shuffle, or recording the order of the cards or something like that, where there may be something malicious going on, that would be something that could help an investigation as far as lawfully, you know, I guess, well, maybe not, I don't know. But that could put a lot of things together. If you see somebody in review taking a picture of the cards, why are they doing that? And that could be something that triggers you to go ahead and go down that avenue. But as far as, you know, say if we picked up you on a blackjack game and we knew you were counting, and you take out your phone, we're not zooming in on it. It's not going to, you know, that's not something that we have a curiosity in, because we know who you are, and it's just going to be, you know, Richard Munchkin's over there. We're going to let table games know. And even if you're on your phone, there's not really a point in doing it. So we try to stay, at least the places I've been at, we try to stay away from that avenue as much as we can, because you don't want to ever be accused of doing something malicious on our end, I should say. You know, we don't want to be invading anybody's privacy. At the same time, they could be just enjoying themselves playing a blackjack game.
Yeah, and sometimes players send, I'll just call it pornographic pictures back and forth for non-AP reasons. Once your surveillance guys get an eye full of that,
it might be hard for them to just go back to doing the regular job.
Correct. Yeah, it's a distraction. But at the same time, you know, everything records. So that's the last thing you want recording on your system is some pornographic image on somebody's phone.
Now, on a lot of scams, there are distractions all over a casino. So if somebody was about to introduce a phony shoe for, hypothetically, they might have fires in the bathroom. They might have basically topless girls walking through the casino. They might have two guys getting into a fight over whether the Cowboys are a good team or not. And like all happening slightly before the switch takes place, so that the pit and the surveillance is in overload before they do something sneaky. This is not AP. This would be criminal.
Right.
Do you have any experience with anything like that? Is this when too much is happening? Do you look in another part of the casino, or what's happening?
I personally have not had I've never had that many things go off at the same time where it wasn't where it became an issue. I was told a story of a place where a lady had kept flashing on a crap game, and every time she would flash, one of the people on the other end of the table would pass post. I don't know if that's true, but you know that is a distraction that could easily be head turning. But yeah, I mean, as more things go off in the casino, the people on the floor especially are going to turn and look at it. It's human nature. It's hard to not look at the train wreck or whatever's going on, you know, on that side on your left when you're leaving your right wide open. It's hard to keep game protection down. It's hard to not get distracted by things that happen, especially a fight. When a fight breaks out, usually you see, you know, 30, 40 heads turn and look right at it, and then everybody, even customers, to other customers are vulnerable. You know, somebody turns their head to look at a fight. There might be a purse theft, a snatch and grab, something like that. And it's hard to not look at that. But at the same time, you know, that could happen. It could easily happen. I'm not going to say it hasn't. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you only, like I said, you have a limited number of people in the room. So if something major or one or two major events are going off, that's your attention. And it's hard to you know, it's hard to go back in Monday morning quarterback anything and say it should have been done this way when, you know, at the time it's hard to not take your attention and put it on something else, because that's what we do.
So when the fight happens, and depending on the casino, that could happen nightly or weekly or some, do you, after the fact, go back and review the tape of the whole casino? I don't know if that's possible, to see if anybody was using that as such an opportunity to grab and run?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely can, especially in that area. It's not a bad practice to do something like that. You know, if you're at table one in pit one, and you know, a fight breaks out at table eight, you know, it might be, you know, behind you or to your right, and everybody looks that way. You might want to start, you know, checking out. Like you said, after everything's all said and done, you might want to start checking out, you know, each game or the slot area or the bar or whatever's close by. But that immediate area is definitely something that could be looked at. Even if it's, you know, medically, somebody has a heart attack or something like that, you know, goes down on a game. What does everybody else do when it's all said and done? What is everybody else doing? You know, all the attention's on that one person. So you may go back and take a look and see if anybody else took that distraction to their advantage.
A lot of casinos have a policy on table games. There's some threshold. Anybody who bets above this amount, you have to call surveillance. Do you work in a kind of place where they do that? And what's surveillance's attitude about? And one of the reasons I'm asking is, I was playing in a casino where the blackjack limit was $1,000. But the limit on a carnival game was $50. But if you bet $50 on that carnival game, they had to call surveillance.
Exactly, because it's table max, yep.
Because it's table max, exactly. And all I could think of was the guys in surveillance must be rolling their eyes, like, because the guy's betting $50 and they're getting these calls. Anyway, How does surveillance feel about those calls?
It does get annoying when it happens, especially when it's busy, because they, like you said, they have to call. There's thresholds where they will have to call, and every place is different. But it's like one of those deals where, you know, if you're not doing anything, maybe you check the person out a little bit. If you are, you know, if it's busy, maybe you just, you know, go snap a picture of the person, and you can check the person, you know, the play out later on if you have to. Or maybe some people do actively watch, or maybe some people don't watch at all. It's that can go, you know, any way. Like, you know, oh, hey, it's Joe Smith. He's playing high limit baccarat again. You know, they're just calling because he's betting 5,000 a hand. Great. And you move on. Like I said, sometimes complacency happens, and sometimes that could be a bad thing.
Whenever I've paid off a sizable marker, so we'll say $20,000, so I take the money in, give it to the cage, and so the regular cage person always calls the supervisor over to watch, and then together they call surveillance. You look down and you see, you know, two straps of 10,000, two employees there. What else can you do? You say, okay, got it. Do you record the name and the? How do you do that? What do you do?
That's a good question too. This goes back. This will fall under the every place is different. A lot of people will take that name, you know, just because we got a phone call, right? So you write something down. So and so called about something. And this is the player and the amount. Or some places go, yep, okay, send it out, and we'll check it and make sure it's right. And then if it's not, maybe call back and be like, oh, hey, you overpaid that person $3,000 or something like that. But, yeah, a lot of times it's just a notification. It goes back to the table max thing. It's just, hey, we have to call on this, you know, a certain amount paid out, or a certain amount brought in. And, you know, we're counting, you know, Bob Dancer brought up $150,000 in checks. You know, he was at table 805. We're gonna call him out now. Okay, great. And we'll, you know, we'll take all the information down that we need and move on when it's over.
Well, that, by the way, that does sound great to me. I just want to let you know that.
Do you get called for every hand pay, every W2G in slots and video poker?
If there's a W2G, no. There are limits. There are certain cutoffs, and every state is different on actually, yeah, probably every state is different, but from house to house it may vary too. So I can't speak for everybody, but yeah, they call on some, but there is a threshold. And it's gaming has gotten so big, I guess, that certain things, especially when you're a slot house, for instance, things like that may be called more frequently. You don't have anything else to call on, so you call on that. You know, it might be a lower limit, but when you're a full-blown casino resort, you may have bigger things that you have to worry about, so they might up that minimum to a certain amount that they have to call on.
I don't know how big of a city you work in, but most places have competitors, some of which they're not particularly friendly with. When somebody hits you as an AP or a cheater, does surveillance normally call their competitors, even their enemies, to let them know somebody like that's in town?
Yes and no, but friends go a long way. So, you know, an AP, probably not. It's not really that, like I said, we don't sweat APs that much. But if a big scam's going around, you'll reach out to your buddies. And
our
kinda...
listeners would sure like to know where you work.
I'm not going to say that I've never sent out a picture, but it's not the priority. Again, you're going to see the same faces that you normally see from time to time. But the bigger stuff is really what you don't want to clog up anybody's inbox with things that they may or may not read. But the bigger stuff they read. You know, if you're hit with a scam for like 50,000, and there's other places in your area, you know, you're going to reach out to your buddies. But to go back to your first question, no, I wouldn't reach out to people I don't like at all, because what have you done for me lately?
Do you contribute to OSN?
I don't contribute, no.
And when there's a flyer, like through OSN, is that whoever decides to put one out there? They just, and how wide does it get sent around?
Yeah, it's each house would send out their own information, so it's hard. Even any program, you know, it goes back to Griffin when they got in trouble. you have to be able to evaluate people on your own. Sometimes you can't take someone else's word on it. You build your own book internally. You know, we verified Richard Munchkin as a card counter. We also verified that he hold cards, right? So we have you down for those two things. So if we see your flyer pop up, we know it's right because we looked at it. I like to look at things myself and, you know, be the judge and jury on it. You know, you can't always take somebody else's word for it. So you got to take everything with a grain of salt. It's subjective to the point where if someone's wrong, you know, your information could get put out there. You know, I saw Bob Dancer. He was card counting at, you know, this casino in this state on this day. And maybe he wasn't. But maybe the person that put it out there didn't get it verified. You know, I always try to be cautious with my approach.
Now, we've spoken several times about having the ability to look today at what happened yesterday because the tapes are saved and the cameras can be synced up. Now, in general, how long is tapes is are physical things. Digital could be saved forever, theoretically. How long do you save that kind of information?
That all depends on your state. Every state has different regulations for minimum requirements. I won't say how long, but I'll say that, you know, every period, it could be as minimum as 5 days. It could be a max of 40 days. That's just the stuff that's constantly recording. Once you designate something as evidence, you'll have it forever until it gets deleted. But there's, it's because it's safe. It's just like in the old days, taking out a VCR tape and burning, you know, the coverage of somebody past posting on it. That's your evidence. So you're going to have that. That's taken out of your system. That's taken out of your loop. So that part of it's put away. But yeah, everybody's got their own different requirements from state to state. I can't speak on many other places, but it's always different. It seems like other states are more lenient with some of their recording requirements, and some states are more harsh.
But whatever the state said, would you take the position with your bosses that keeping it longer is better than getting rid of it right when the law says you can?
Yeah, you do have that option. The state is just the minimum. So you're going to have the option of extending it. It could cost you more money because you might need a bigger storage area. So there's a give and take. So you can extend it to 100 days if you wanted to, but you would need something massive to store it. So it's not an expense that sometimes people want to take, but if you can get a little over the minimum, that's never a bad thing.
Now, some casinos intentionally seem to design choke points, which would be where people have to pass through and are generally looking up at something, and so you can get a good picture of their face. Have you ever been asked to identify where the best four places for choke points would be in your casino, or how could they make one, or anything like that?
No, not really. They don't. Usually that just kind of happens. I don't know if it's by design on their end, but usually the consult, like with us, wouldn't be there. But we could always kind of take a camera and designate it as a choke point camera after the fact. So if they build, you know, an entryway off of an escalator or something like that, they set it up and the planning goes through and everything like that. And then we may just take a camera and point it that way and just be like, oh, hey, this is a great, you know, this is a great area for people to come in. Maybe we set something up here to just in case we need it for, you know, taking back a cheater or something like that and getting a photo.
A lot of casinos have put cameras at the cashier's cage, actually built into the bars of the cage, or sometimes there'll be a camera on the counter looking up at the player. Is that where you find the best pictures come from?
I've seen these photos. I personally, they are really good photos, but I don't like doing it just because it's in reach of the player. I've always liked keeping my equipment, you know, away on the back wall or on the ceiling or something like that. But it's kind of weird to just have a camera sitting on a counter at somebody. But the quality is actually really good. I prefer the shot from inside the cage.
Also, if a lot of the kiosks now, like where you can cash a slot ticket, a lot of these kiosks have cameras built into them. Do you guys, I don't know if you guys have those cameras, but do you know if the surveillance room in those places has direct access to those cameras?
I've never used them like that, but I would assume that they would. I guess it depends. It depends on if in the kiosk, if it's your kiosk, I guess you could. And if it's like an ATM, if there's an ATM that's not yours, maybe not. That's actually a really good question that I don't have an answer to. But the if it's your property, if it's your, you know, your kiosk and or your framing of the kiosk or something like that, then I would definitely see that as an option. And I would think that the surveillance people would have it. It would just be another useful tool for them. I think it would be, if I'm not wrong, I think if you put it on an ATM or in an ATM, it wouldn't be able to come back to the room. I think it would have to go out to the company that that leases out the ATM.
Interesting. Well, in addition to ATMs, many casinos have kiosks where you have to swipe your card to activate your multiplier or get drawing tickets or something. So many casinos have versions of this. I would think that would be a place as well. All right, we are going to take a break. We're talking to Griff, and we have lots more questions left, and it's time to do some commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In December, by the time this show is posted, which will be on December 27th, all the December specials are over. And as we're recording it early in December, the January promotions have not yet been announced. So there's no need to tell you about the Christmas Day double points, which happened a couple days ago. The only thing to talk about is the new semester of free video poker classes is happening in a week and a half, starting on Tuesday, January 8th, 2019, at noon. It's in the Silverado Lounge, which is the first lounge you come to when you come in from the parking garage. It's immediately adjacent to Don Vito's Italian restaurant. At videopoker.com, the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. The game of the week is Face Card Frenzy. You may play this game anywhere from 6 coins per line to 10 coins, and the odds get better as you increase your bet. In this game, full houses and quads, including jacks, queens, kings, and aces, return a lot more than usual. To make the math work, all the pay schedule categories are bumped up, meaning that you need an entirely new strategy to play this game. When this was released, there were none of the games on it paid more than 99%. So it would take a really strong promotion to make this game worthwhile. But at videopoker.com, currently, their new games do have options in there to return more than 99%, so slot directors are allowed to put in those pay schedules should they so desire. All right, we're talking to Griff about surveillance issues. The difference between a back-off and a trespass obviously is dependent on where you're working. But in general, what would be the difference at the casinos you work at?
The back off would just typically be your, you can't play blackjack here anymore. The trespass usually comes for an AP, or you're talking about just an AP, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the back off is just, you can't play blackjack here anymore. And your trespass might, basically, you're only going to get trespassed for being an AP if you're a dick. You really don't just don't be, a jerk to anybody, and they won't really take it that far from my experience. It's just like, Richard, you can't play blackjack here anymore. Okay, see you later. And off you go. And that's the easy way to do it. There's always an easy way and a hard way to everything. And it's like one of those things where if you don't poke the bear, you really don't have to. you can choose not to. I know sometimes, I don't know what's said, and I don't know, on the other end if things are communicated poorly or what, but sometimes it just goes south and, there's an argument or whatever, and that's the last thing you want to see. But it's much easier to just, cleanly just go up to somebody, especially if you're an RN, you know, Richard, if you're playing at a table and you're an RN and I walk up and go, hey, Richard, how are you? Are you going to leave? More than
yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah, more than likely. Yeah. And that's, sometimes it's that easy. You know, if you go up to 502 spots and I come over and shuffle, maybe I'm made. I'm going to get out of here. And it could be that easy. Sometimes it's taken to the taken to an extreme by it could be both parties. Sometimes it's the casino that's the aggressor, and sometimes it's the AP that's the aggressor. And it sucks to see it because it's such an easy thing to do. It's just, you know, spook them a little bit, and you know, takes care of itself.
But yeah, again, I said this last week, but you work at an enlightened property if that's the policy there. I wish more were like wherever it is that you're working, because
that's my input. I've seen it the easy way and I've seen it the hard way. That's just in a perfect world, it is that easy. Just to, you know, the RN, go over and call the RN by their name if you know it, and more than likely 99% of the time they're just going to leave, and it's that simple. The whole thing can be over in seconds.
What is RN?
Refuse name.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good. I thought Richard was a registered nurse, and he had hidden that from me so far. So I knew more things about him than that. Now, there are programs that can identify card counters. Are there other apps that can identify advantage play at other table games?
That's a great question. If there are, I don't know of any. That would be – now you got me thinking, because I'm trying to picture how that would actually work. But I'm not sure. That's a good question. Something I can definitely look into for a future show.
We were talking about people getting backed off for all kinds of things last time. And it's funny because when I talk to people about this, they just find it hard to believe. And one of the, if they're actually curious, I tell them, well, look, just go into one of the big Las Vegas casinos and go up to the roulette wheel and start writing down the numbers and stand there for a while and see how long you last. Does your casino sweat people writing down the numbers that have come up on the roulette wheel?
Not really. Sometimes it's, well, I don't want to say not really, because I don't know what's in everybody's mind, but you know, you guys have the people that you read, and we have the people that we read, the some of us that read. We have the Bill Zenders, and we have the Willie Allisons and people like that, and Elliot Jacobson. And you read article after article, and you know, the AP plays just as well as the AP does. Like I said, we teach people to broaden your horizon. Don't just limit it to card counting. There's so much more. And, you know, that might raise suspicion to some people, yes. Does it always? No. You know, for an example, you know, somebody finds a bias wheel. I read an article about Billy Walters, I think it was in the 80s, found a bias wheels all over, and he was hitting them, and they just took the wheel and moved it somewhere else, and he just went and found it, and they just kept hitting him, and they didn't understand how it was being done. You know, at the time, and they took a real beating because of it. So sometimes people don't pick up right away on what's going on. So that's a mixed answer too. It's, you know, sometimes we may understand what's happening. Sometimes it could be chalked up to a player just, you know, being superstitious and trying to find their lucky number. But it's not something that should be ignored. It's something that should be focused on.
RFID chips, where the chips inside have some kind of microchip. I'm using the word chips in two different ways. The casino chips have some kind of a electronic chip inside that tells the program how much you're betting. How many casinos percentage-wise use that to determine, to track the bets?
I don't know. That's a question that is out there that I have no answer on. But they do exist. The RFID chips are pretty cool. But I think the main use for them, actually, there's probably a few main uses for them. I'm wondering if when you take your chips to the cage and you cash out, you know, maybe if you put them on a scanner or something like that, it would tell you how much is there so they can't make a mistake. Or, you know, you don't have a dealer leaving property with one. Maybe an alarm goes off if an RFID goes out back of house or something like that. So I can see some safety things like that. I'm not sure of a surveillance on the surveillance end. I'm not sure what they would have built in to help with RFID. I think it's basically for a game protection type measure.
Well, the companies that make these things have been trying to market them as, you know, here's a way you can accurately know exactly what someone's average bet is and how many hands per hour are being played and all kinds of other, you know, things. But they have been slow to proliferate, but they are out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if people are actually buying into it yet. And if they're trying to use it for that reason, maybe it was, you know, the same as facial recognition. You know, and last time we talked, you know, some people didn't like it at first, but it's one of those things that may pick up some steam as it goes along.
If you were a run-of-the-mill surveillance operator, not one of the supervisors, but just one of the worker bees, are there special beginning of the day and ending of the day procedures you have to go through that you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you come in, it's a 24-hour industry, obviously. And when you come into work, you know, you want to pick up where the last shift left off. So, you know, your person might be leaving you with a drop or an escort or a watch on a person. You know, here's, you know, an employee that we may be watching. It's your turn to pick it up. So you want to gather as much information as you can from the prior shift before you leave. And then at the same time, you know, when your shift's over, you want to pass on as much information as that happened during the shift to the people that relieve you, kind of so that everybody's in the know. You know, you don't want to leave your teammates blind into what they're doing. You want to keep up on everything and kind of get yourself settled and kind of just pick up right where they left off. And then hopefully it's a seamless transition. And sometimes they have nothing. And it's just like, you know, okay, it was a slow day, and then you would kind of sit down and, you know, start yourself from scratch and, you know, try to find your own investigation to watch or dive into the, you know, cage and see if anything's going on in there or follow around a slot attendant or something like that and just see what you can, you know, see what you can find.
Let's say a particular casino had 6 surveillance operators day shift on a Tuesday. Were that the case, how many would they have on swing, how many on grave, and how would it differ on Saturday compared to Tuesday?
That's another good question. The time of day definitely takes your staffing into account. So everybody has a minimum staffing that the state says, you know, we want this many people in your surveillance room. And that's cool because it helps us and kind of ensures a job. But at the same time, you know, when it's Tuesday morning, some places have it straight across the board. It is different. I guess it's up to the director of each property, but when, you know, some people have 6 on day, 6 on swing, 6 on grave, and then some people might have 6 on day on a Tuesday, and then Friday and Saturday night, swing shift into grave, there might be 10, right? So you want to pick up, you want to stagger your shifts if you can. It's always your term was an enlightened world?
Enlightened casino.
An enlightened casino, yes. If you want to go to an enlightened casino.
Those places don't exist.
Yeah. In all actuality, you want to have as many people on when it's busy, but sometimes it doesn't always work out that well.
But it's the same guys. So they're 6 on Tuesday and 10 on Friday and Saturday. So that would mean they work 5 hours on a Tuesday and 7 hours on a, or, you know, 12 hours on a Friday. Does it work that way?
Oh, you can always stagger the shift. So if you want to try to pick up for busy times, you know, if your shift is, if you have enough people to do that, that's why I say, you know, in an enlightened world, sometimes we're very short staffed, but you might be able to move a couple people. So instead of doing a noon to 8, maybe you have a couple people doing a 4 to midnight. You know, or something like that, to cover, just put an extra body in the room at the busy time of the day. But not everybody has that luxury, which is kind of disappointing.
Let's say you said you're one of the people who reads. Let's say, you know, Bill Zender has a new book, you know, like card counting for the casino executive, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to go to your bosses and say, hey, we should get this book. People here in the surveillance room should read it. Will they pay for it?
Absolutely. Well, good ones will. Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, you have people that will support you 1,000%, and then you'll have people that, you know, well, that book costs $1,000. So, probably not, but that $1,000, you know, sometimes is overlooked in the long-term effect it can have on people. You know, how many on your end, look at your end, James Grosjean's book, you know, that book's expensive. It doesn't go to everybody, but that book goes a long way in the long run. So people pay for it. It's the same thing on our end. We try to use every tool to our advantage. Sometimes it's given and sometimes it's not. And it's, you know, sometimes we got to get creative in how we do things.
And now, go ahead, Bob.
Does James Grosjean book have value to you?
No, I've never seen it.
I mean, it's you have to be a pretty serious student to get value out of that book.
Right.
And that, James that's... goes out of his way to make sure people like you don't get a copy.
Exactly.
But, he has an interesting marketing philosophy.
Yes. And he knows the value in where that book is going to go. And that was, but you know, to somebody like Richard or you, that book could be very valuable. So in getting that book, the long-term effect of you having that book is that, you know, I feel like it's the same thing as the long-term effect of me buying $1,000 Bill Zender book. It's the same, I feel like it's the same principle for your, you know, we do two different things, but it, we could have the same, that one thing could have the same effect on both of us.
Well, I'm sure the Bill Zender book costs considerably less than $1,000. I bought a copy 25 years ago, and cheap is my middle name. But James's book, so far he has no interest whatsoever in selling me a copy for any price. So I would have to get it on the black market or something if I was going to get it.
That's going to cost a lot more.
Yeah, a lot more. So now many surveillance people see, it seems like on their off hours, they are advantage players. Do you play?
Yeah, I do. It's not frequently, not nearly, actually it's sparingly, but yes, you can't turn it off when you go to a casino in your spare time. I can't look at a blackjack game now and not count. I can't, you know, it's built in at this point. You can't sit at a carnival game and not hole card. It's just, or I wouldn't even sit at a carnival game where if I wasn't hole carding, but it's not something that I do a lot, you know, where it would even be noticed by anybody. I also don't have the stakes to do it. So it's actually, I can practice all I want. I'm not going to get any heat.
Okay. So you're betting small enough that you haven't attracted any attention.
No, never. It's only, like I said, I barely get out. So it's just something basically for fun and a little bit of practice at the same time. Have a good time.
How much of your work is done real time versus after the fact analysis, where you think there was somebody yesterday who was counting and the table games people want to know when he comes in next time how good he was?
That's a two-part question. There's been a few of those. So if we have if you're the table game person and you call me up and you say that Richard, I'll use Richard as another example. I'll say Richard was here yesterday. He beat us for $25,000. We want to take a look at his play. We can easily go back and check it out and you know evaluate the play in review. We also may keep it, you know, going back to what I said about putting a photo up on the wall. We may even just, you know, keep him in mind for the next time he's here and, you know, hey, let's take a look at his play now. We didn't really get that good of a read on it last time or it was in review. Now we can watch him live. So it's a two-phase process. You can do both. But it's easier to watch somebody as they're doing it instead of review because review, everything is a little you can't move anything. So it's kind of, you know what I mean? It's kind of
No, I don't.
You can't – in review, the cameras don't move. So if you're watching somebody live, you can move around the cameras and do your own thing. Review, your hands are kind of tied a little bit with what you can do and what you can't do.
Uh-huh.
Let's say that there's an advantage play going on. Maybe it's a whole card play, or you're going to look at people, someone, because of a whole card play. Most of the cameras are above looking down at the cards. Do you go to the other cameras and look at the other players at the table?
Yeah, we can do a lot of things. If it's happening live, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do a lot of things live. I mean, you know, we can take a camera from a bar and try to shoot it at a table if we want to get better angles, to get better face picks. It's all in play. When it's happening live, everything's in play. We might grab, you know, pictures of everybody just in case. And there's, you know, five players at the table. And at the end of the day, you only need one, so you throw away the other four. Or, you know, there's two out of five, so, you throw away the other three. But, yeah, you can take angles that you don't normally have when you're watching something live. You have much more flexibility as far as the angles that you can take to get different games. Not even games, if you limit it to anything. If you're watching slots or you're watching, you know, in review, you may have a shot of a slot machine from 50 feet away. But in live, you can just zoom in on it and watch it happen, you know, in real time. Everything is different live.
But if you're doing a review of a play that happened yesterday, you don't have any shots of the people that were at the table other than the whatever overhead angle is there.
Right. And that's when you'd have to get creative. You know, that's when you might have to follow the person backward like you were talking earlier. And or it might have been last time, I forget. But, you know, that's where you take it back and try to get a better face pick if you can. Or you can take different approaches, but usually rewind, your hands are more tied as far as what you can do.
Now
if you
cameras.
rewind from the day before, are you still able to zoom in once you find what might be a clear shot of the face?
It depends on the camera. Some cameras, yes. Some cameras, no. Older stuff, probably not. Newer stuff, probably.
Huh.
Now, in a casino, you can look at the ceiling and you can see a brown globe, which means, yeah, there's a camera in there. But are there cameras around that are basically invisible that still provide you with enough useful information that you can use it and they're basically cannot be seen by the customers?
Yeah, sure. You can have a pinhole camera or something like that. Usually they're not used. I don't think they're used on the casino floor. I've never seen one used on the casino floor. That would be for like an operation where, you know, somebody, maybe you have an employee stealing from your warehouse, you know, and you pop a hidden camera in there where it blends in with the ceiling and you wouldn't notice it, you know, something like that. If your state allows it, number one, some states, you know, have tricky laws where the cameras have to be visible. But on the casino floor, you know, I think the dome actually helps protect, you know, it gives everybody that feeling of the normal player, it gives them that feeling of protection and like, you know, they're safe. It gives that feeling of safety. So you want that on the floor. You don't normally see it on the casino floor, maybe like in an office setting or something like that. I think it would be more valuable.
When an employee is, suspected, not proven, but suspected. Do you ever do things such as somebody from surveillance or elsewhere wears a wire to go in and record, to interview that person, perhaps casually, and to see what you can find? Is that, I mean, it's done in the movies all the time, and the FBI seems to use that. Does surveillance?
I've never seen it used. I wouldn't doubt it, but I've never seen it used. A lot of times, you know, in my experiences, we don't even get to interrogate or talk to anybody. We just kind of, you know, we provide the behind-the-scenes stuff. We provide all the video evidence that we can get. You know, each casino might have an investigator or a security shift supervisor or somebody like that, or somebody from the police that's on property or in the area, you know, Metro or something like that may come in and do the interrogation, or the security director or something like that, where we kind of provide all the evidence that they're going to need. Everything can get tricky like that. Again, it goes back to what your state allows too. You might be in a jurisdiction where you can't do that. I don't know. Everybody's different, but I've never seen it done.
When it comes time to call in the police for whatever reason, is that decision ever made by you, or you just send on the information to relevant people, perhaps with a recommendation, but they have to make the final decision?
I like leaving the decision up to other people. We have, you know, we observe and we report. So our finding goes out, you know, here's what we have, and you be the judge for yourself. You know, it may be nothing to you, and that's okay. We're not, you know, from the departments that I've been in, we're not really in a position to make that call. You know, that's why we have security and the police and even the gaming commission. You know, they may get involved in a bet dispute, something that small, or something like that, where we just kind of show them what we have and let them run with it. And, you know, that's kind of a good thing for us, because when you're not making that decision, you really can't get in any trouble if it goes south. And it's kind of a win-win. When you're looking at us, you know, you just kind of show them what you have, show them every angle, and let them make the decision.
Are surveillance and security in most casinos part of the same department, or are they in different departments?
I guess that depends on the house. I've seen people who have had the title of security/surveillance director, and I have seen people differentiate. I've always been in houses that differentiate. Some people can use security as a training ground for surveillance. You know, when you, instead of hiring somebody from outside, you may pull a security officer in and take them in and put them on your team. That could be valuable. You know, you could have a bigger department and kind of a talent pool to evaluate people, that see if they're ready to come up into the room and do what we do.
So a surveillance guy would be, if he has that experience, you would think that is a definite plus to go into surveillance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they know the ins and outs of the floor. You can even use it as a, you know, like I said, like a grooming ground, like a minor league, if you wanted to call it that. Of, you know, you can evaluate your potential talent pool before they come up into the room. So I can see how that could be valuable. But I've always been in places that have had different security and surveillance departments. So, but I would definitely, if I was in a place where I had both, it would definitely be looked at that way. You know, maybe I can train you. Maybe there could be an optional program where, that, you know, I can train you on how to count cards, see if you get it. I can train you on how to do cage transactions, see if you get it. And if you get it, maybe when I have an opening, I come to you and kind of, you know, offer you the job. Because you've already been in my training program. So I could easily see how that would be valuable, yeah.
Well, you know, I think
a
security person would have, as you say, the advantages about sort of knowing the floor and the cage and things like that, but probably not really know anything about table games. Whereas, you know, if you hire someone who used to be a floor man, he's going to know a lot more about the table games, maybe. But not the other stuff. So I guess it's hard to find the right person who can sort of navigate both.
It is, and we have pulled from both worlds. We've pulled from the table games world. We've pulled from security. You know, it goes both ways. And knowing the floor is a big part of it, because you have to put cameras to the floor. You know, you've walked that floor every day as a security guard, and now you just have to know some cameras to put on top of where you are. You know what I mean? You already know the groundwork. I like how you said maybe on the table games floor, man.
Well, you know, a long time ago, the pit bosses were the first line of defense.
Yes.
Often there was nobody up in the eye in the sky, and the cameras didn't work. And the bosses really kind of knew a lot more about game protection than they do now. Now they're basically clerks. They're so busy filling out ratings cards and, you know, watching too many games.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I feel like the customer service aspect has kind of taken over the game protection aspect of being a floor supervisor and being that first line of defense on the floor.
Yeah.
Last week, I think you said that when you were going to hire a surveillance guy, one of the things you looked at would be his how comfortable he is with math. I would think when they're hiring security guys, their math IQ is not really part of the interview process.
No, not at all.
Maybe it's sometimes, you know, do they have muscles? Although some security guys wouldn't be any help at all in breaking up a fight, but a lot of them would be. A lot of them are pretty big guys, and that seems to be more important than intelligence. But all right. So, Griff, we're going to let you go. This has been 2 weeks of shows for which we thank you very much. It has been very enlightening to Richard and me, and I suspect our guest. Is there any final word you have before we let you run away?
No, I just want to say thanks for having me on. I had a really good time. Like I said, I really enjoy the show, and you know, I'm going to keep listening. And if you'll have me again in the future, maybe I'll bring a friend, and you know, I'd like to come back on.
Well, if
that's
you could,
great,
we pretty well. First of all, that would be good. Second of all, help us with new questions, because we had lots of listener questions, and we've pretty much asked them all. So if you can think, you know, this would be a good thing to talk about, then our answer is going to be yes. So we thank you. And I thank you, Richard. And for our listeners, Happy New Year, and go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Bye-bye.